Welcome to Keep the Ball Rolling, presented by Tommy Media. On today's show, we recap the weekend in Chicago for the men's soccer team. Then Noah had a phone interview with the new athletic director, Phil Esten, and we wrapped the show with some Tommy Hoops talk.
Hey everyone, and thank you for joining us on Keep the Ball Rolling, the only show with the audacity to celebrate, formally in some respects, 10 episodes. I'm Noah Brownson, hey. Alongside Brady Haldmeier and Althea Larson, joined today by Carly Noble as well. And Carly, I apologize, this will be directed more toward Brady and Althea for right now, but we'll get you in here. But Brady and Althea, so we've been doing this for the era-spanning time frame of 2.5 months. In that time, we've done 10 episodes. We've had just under 1,000 views, which in the day and age of viral videos and YouTube stars going, you know, big and whatnot, 1,000 doesn't seem like a whole lot, but I know I'm just like, in the spirit of Thanksgiving, I'm thankful for having, you know, not only just you two sit here and listen to my rants week in and week out, but also 1,000 people who want to sit through. So for all of you listening at home, thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, 10 episodes is pretty good. I didn't know it was our 10th. I guess I did. It says right here, episode 10. I didn't think we were going to make it this far.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding. but 10 episodes, yeah, let's hope for 10 more.
Well, because you and Gamiel did 6 back in the spring. So this is technically episode 16 for you. But for me, it's 10. For Althea, it's 9 because she joined in.
I think it's 8.
8? Okay.
It's 8.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, either way.
Close enough.
Yeah.
For me, it's 10. It's all about me. We're celebrating this now. but no, episode 10 of season 2. And speaking of rants and you all sitting through, I'm sorry, but we have to go back to football real quick before we get in.
We've got
We've got a great show for you, as Brady said. We're going to be talking some men's soccer. That's why Carly's here. She went down to Chicago. We'll be talking some basketball. And then we sat down with I sat down with Phil Esten, who is currently the deputy athletics director at Penn State. Just for an interview. He'll be the new athletics director starting in January. It was really fun. Y'all are going to enjoy that one. But as I promised, I'll keep this short. Football rant. Oh, my goodness. Brady, did you see anything from the first round?
I know there was a lot of blowouts. The two Minnesota teams, Bethel, St. John's, both blow out their opponents. That's kind of the extent.
St. John's put up 84 flipping points. Yeah. 84. Martin Luther scored 6.
Yeah.
And you're telling me that St. Thomas is nowhere near as good as Martin Luther. There were 16 teams, 8 games. So half of the games played in this first round were decided by 30 points or more. And you're telling me that St. Thomas is not better than one of the 8 teams who lost. It's we don't have a bleeping noise, so I'm going to keep this PG. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unflippin' believable. That's the extent of my rant. I just wanted to get that out where the St. Thomas should be in right now.
Yeah, they absolutely should be. They're one of the best 32 teams in the country, but you know, it's just the tradition of the NCAA. You're never going to get 3 teams from a conference.
I don't see why not, though. Like,
and I don't know why it is that way. What is there, 6 to 8 at-large bids?
Yeah, something like that.
So, you know, you would think that the 6 to 8 best teams, I think it might be 6, the 6 at-large bids would be the next 6 best teams in the country, and St. Thomas would certainly be in that conversation.
And to be fair, there were some pretty close games. I mean, the Mary Harden-Baylor, Harden-Simmons game, that was 27-6. Muhlenberg-Delaware Valley was 20-13. Brockport-Framingham State, 40-27. So there were some good games. But I'm just saying, like Johns Hopkins, versus MIT, 49-0. Yeah. North Central versus Hanover, 52-0. St. John's versus Martin Luther, 84-6. Mount Union versus Denison, 60-0. And I know D3 isn't viewed as much as, you know, say D1 or the NFL, but you still want competitive games. That just keeps people interested in the sport. It keeps people coming back.
Right.
I would much rather sit and watch a really closely contested game than a blowout. And for as heartbreaking as the Bethel loss at the end of the season was for St. Thomas, that was probably one of the most enjoyable games I've watched because the crowd was engaged the entire time. Everybody was on the edge of their seat. It helped that Bethel was taking down, at the time, number 7 ranked St. Thomas, or number 9 ranked.
Yeah.
But even after that loss, everybody was still engaged. Everybody still had a good time. And St. Thomas is still ranked 16th in the nation. The D3 website acknowledged that St. Thomas is one of the top 25 teams in the nation still. And to say that they are not in the playoffs, Brady, that is a darn shame. It's a darn shame.
It really is. I mean, I don't know what else can be said about it. I don't think the NCAA is going to change their policy of of putting in, I mean, it's not really a policy. It's just kind of an unwritten rule that three teams aren't going to make it from a conference, but it's a stupid rule.
It's absolutely stupid.
One that's probably not going to be changed for a long time. But on the topic of heartbreaking losses, the men's soccer team falls this weekend in Chicago to Luther 1-0.
I like that transition you
1-0,
did there.
Thank you. I've been working on that. 1-0, I should
say. That's what we call a segue in the business.
Yeah. Carly, you were down there. It was a cold, rainy day, and we, you know, the St. Thomas was, from what I talking with you about the game, they were kind of lackadaisical in the beginning and then had a late push, but couldn't find the back of the net.
They were. The game started off, it was a battle throughout the whole game, but the game started off back and forth. Luther had a really strong midfield section, so it was really hard for the Tommies to get the ball over half field, and it was back and forth. We were playing mostly defensively in the first half, I would say. Coming off out after the halftime, it was still 0-0, and then Luther scored in the first 10 minutes. That goal, honestly, was a pretty soft goal, as Coach Lowry said. They had one of their forwards shoot it, bounced off Aiden. Aiden kind of had it.
Bounced off the goalie's chest.
Yeah, bounced off, and then they rebounded in. I mean, it was a goal you couldn't do much about, but shouldn't have been given up. Then the Tommies started attacking more. They brought their forwards up and putting pressure on Luther. And if we would have had 10 extra minutes in that game, we definitely could have tied it and
just
possibly won.
Time.
We ran out of time. I mean, so the whistle blew and it was over.
So there are some games that teams lose that they shouldn't lose, where you go in, you're clearly better than the other team. I'm not going to bring it back to football, but we could. There are plenty of examples there. And you just, for whatever reason, you just don't win. You don't do as well. And there are some games that you play where the other team is just clearly better. Was the game against Luther, or which one of those was the game against Luther?
I thought they matched up pretty well. Luther beat us once earlier in the season, but both games were a complete battle. I think both teams are pretty equal. It was just one of those things that we just couldn't capitalize on getting the ball in the back of the net, so that was really a struggle. But I give credit to the guys. They played that game till the whistle blew at the end, and they never gave up. So it was a really good game to watch, and I was fortunate to go.
Yeah, so a little too little, too late for the Tommies. But as you mentioned earlier and in your story, they have a very young team. I think you said 9 freshmen that contribute and 8 sophomores, and very young team.
Very young team, yeah. They're graduating 4 seniors, but they still have a super young team. I looked at the roster for the tournament. They actually have 17 freshmen on their tournament roster.
Wow.
A few of them played a lot of minutes, actually. George Marty and Jack Berry played. They started and pretty much played the entire season. And then 12 returning sophomores, which over half of them played regularly, so...
Some of those people you mentioned were pulled up from the JV teams for the
tournament,
for the playoff roster. But yeah, I mean, they should be good for a long time. So it's a promising sign for the men's soccer team, even though they lost to Luther. But, you know, can't win them all.
For the past however many years I've been here covering sports, probably 3 or 4. I don't remember. It feels like forever. St. Thomas has never once fielded a championship team. And men's soccer... has been one of the... No, sorry, 2015 men's soccer won.
Didn't basketball win 2015, 2016 season?
They got close. Maybe they did.
Because I don't know. It might have been your freshman year.
Either way, I started covering my sophomore year. So in the time that I've been covering sports for Tommy Media, there's not been a win.
Yep.
And men's soccer has kind of been one of the teams who perennially, you know, they make it really far into the NCAA tournament. What's going to be the final push that this men's soccer team needs to make? Obviously, they're playing really well, and in the past couple of years, they've had some really, really good players, guys like the Oliver brothers, like Shea Bottom, like Aiden Hogan, who have been kind of anchors of this team, and they haven't been able to make it over the hump. What's going to be the final push that this team needs to make in order to take home a championship?
I think they're just going to have to continue to play together the entire season. This year was kind of... Coach Lowry said, as people were saying, it was going to be a rebuilding year, but what they did is they took that unknowingness going into the season and they really put together a team that worked well together towards the end of the season. So I think if they started that off next season, having these guys that have already played together, that'll definitely benefit them, knowing that the sophomores and freshmen and juniors have all played together this past season. It'll be easier transitioning into next season, I think.
Quick update. 2015, 2016, Tommy's won the national championship. I think it would have been your freshman year.
That was my freshman year.
You weren't covering.
I was working for Tommy Sports at that point, but we didn't go on the road. And so, hey, that was at the time when both organizations played nicely together. So I was doing both. My sophomore year, I was at TSN and Tommy Media. Both are great organizations. I'm not going to say anything else about it. Got to go all PR up in here. But yeah, so I was covering it for TSN, but we didn't go on the road, so we just did home games. I do remember the playoff run. I just didn't remember if they won or not.
Here's another good segue. Speaking of national championships, the new AD, Phil Essens, is going to hope to bring some more home to St. Thomas here. You sat down with him last week, Noah. What did you guys talk about?
You'll obviously hear it in just a couple of minutes, but pretty much everything from, you know, why coming back to St. Thomas, his kind of career throughout five different schools, going from St. Thomas to the U of M, out to California, Ohio, Pennsylvania, just kind of his experience as both a player and as an administrator. So Dr. Phil Esten, current Deputy Athletics Director out of Penn State, and will be Athletic Director here in January. Take a listen. We now welcome on the show Phil Esten, the current Deputy Athletics Director and Chief Operating Officer at Penn State, and in January will be starting as the Vice President and Athletics Director here at St. Thomas. Dr. Esten, thank you for taking time every day to join us.
Absolutely. I'm happy to be here, Noah.
So just right off the bat, has the Athletics Director job at St. Thomas been on your radar for a while now, or what was kind of the process? How long have you known that you were thinking about this and ultimately accepting the job here?
Sure. You know, I've long thought that returning to St. Thomas might be something that'd be in the cards for me and my family. Didn't really know when that might happen. You know, I've enjoyed a career at the Division I level, and really have my family and I have really had opportunities that we've taken advantage of across the country. So we didn't know when that might happen, and when Coach Fritz announced that he was retiring, and Julie and I began the conversation around what that might look like for St. Thomas, and ultimately for, you know, whether or not it'd be a fit for the Essens to come back, we pretty quickly felt pretty strongly that now was the right time. So, you know, it's something that's been in the back of our minds for a very long time, but certainly moved to the front of them a couple months ago.
And so, as you mentioned, you and your wife are both St. Thomas alumni. So obviously you have strong connections here. What parts of St. Thomas made you want to come back eventually?
Well, when we think about our experience at St. Thomas, and it's hard to know this when you're there, but you think back about your experiences and you realize that everything we've accomplished, St. Thomas has had an impact on that in some way, shape, or form, whether it's personally or professionally in our lives. And so we're very thankful, for the things that St. Thomas has provided to us, the opportunities that we had and experiences we had as a result of our time at St. Thomas. We've engaged with the institution over the years as donors and as volunteers, and this is just another opportunity for us to reconnect.
If I remember correctly, in your press conference announcing your acceptance of the position, you mentioned you have three kids between the ages of 5 and 15, correct?
Yeah, they're between those ages. Lucas is 12, Cooper is 10, and Hannah is 7.
Okay. Well, when I was 11, my family moved up from St. Louis to the Twin Cities, and I've got three siblings who we're all within a 5-year span, born 93 to 98, so all kind of a similar age similar age to your children.
Sure.
And from what I remember, it was kind of a difficult transition. Obviously, for any young child, moving can be tough, but we made the transition fairly well and fairly quickly, and a lot of that had to do with just kind of the Twin Cities as a kind of a family-friendly environment. How much did the Twin Cities and just the area in general affect your decision to ultimately move your family back out here?
Sure, yeah. You know, first I'll say we've moved a couple of times. We moved from the Twin Cities originally to Northern California when we spent time in at University of California, Berkeley. And then, of course, we moved from the Berkeley area, the Bay Area, to Central Pennsylvania. And so our family, we've always looked at it as an adventure. You know, we've got each other, and we rely on each other, and we're each other's best friends. And so moving around has been something that we've actually embraced and again, thought of as a little bit of an adventure. But when considering moving back to the Twin Cities, of course, we've got family and friends in the community. And so we knew we'd have a support network and a support system kind of built in when we got back to the Twin Cities. So that certainly was helpful. And then, you know, we recall, well, finally, our time there, whether it's commitment to culture, and a commitment to healthcare, and a commitment to family, and a commitment to outdoor recreation, and faith, and all of the things that are important to us. And so, you know, you put all that together in the formula, and out on the other side kind of spits, it's a no-brainer. And so for us, it really didn't take us very long to say, yes, this is the right opportunity.
So you've spent, since you've graduated from St. Thomas, you spent time working for the University of Minnesota. You mentioned you're out in California. You're currently at Penn State. Was the allure of a D3 college, not necessarily a lighter load, but a sort of change of pace moving from, you know, the really large Division I schools to now what could be described as a large Division III school, but still a Division III school? Was there any, was that a factor in your decision?
You know, really, for me, it's about the impact that we can make, the impact that we can provide and make on our student athletes, and the impact that we can make in the broader community. And frankly, no, I think that can be done at any level. And so knowing that there was a strong values alignment between myself and President Sullivan and the institution, knowing that the Board of Trustees, leadership, and other leadership across the institution strongly aligned with that vision as well. They've got also ambitious goals and aspirations for the university, and the role that athletics can play in helping to achieve those goals. That's really what drove that decision for me. I'd say that whether or not it's Division I or Division III didn't really play that big of a factor. You know, I know that we can have an impact on students' lives and on the institution's lives regardless of level, regardless of division or conference affiliation. And so, you know, I can tell you that I'm very committed to the Division III ideal, very committed to Division III values. I was a Division III athlete. My dad was a Division III coach. I came up in that area, in that realm. And so it's something that's familiar to me and very comfortable to me, and we're committed to making the most impact and providing the most value as we can to the institution and the conference and to students.
You mentioned you were a D3 athlete. You played baseball here when you were at St. Thomas. How has your experience as a student athlete affected kind of your management style now that you're on the administration side of things?
Yeah, you know, I think anytime you can draw upon personal experiences, it does make you better for it. And so you can draw upon those experiences. I was a student athlete. I didn't start the entire, all of the time. I played some of the time. And so I think that also gives me a different perspective. And so, you know, moving into an administrative role, you can draw upon those times. I had the opportunity to serve my dad as a coach. I was a coach for a couple of years after college. I coached high school football a little bit. And so all of those experiences, I think, kind of go into being a good administrator, and it gives you the perspective from all the different points of view.
Right. And so you graduated from St. Thomas with a bachelor's degree in business. You got a master's in sports management and your doctorate from the University of Minnesota in kinesiology. The first two kind of make sense from an administrator standpoint, but the kinesiology, at least for me, came not necessarily as a surprise, but it seems like it wouldn't play as large a role in the management side of things. How important is it for you as someone who is managing athletes to know how their sports are affecting their bodies and their bodily health?
Sure. Well, let me explain all those degrees a little bit, Noah, and it might make some more sense. So my undergraduate degree actually is in corporate fitness with a minor in business administration and a major emphasis in business administration as well. My master's, so that was, St. Thomas at the time didn't have a sport administration degree, so that was a way for me to kind of think through that a little bit. At Ohio State, of course, it was sports administration. And at the University of Minnesota, the sport administration or sport management PhD is in the School of Kinesiology. And so ultimately you leave the institution with a PhD or degree from the School of Kinesiology and Kinesiology, but the emphasis was in sport administration, and I did get a minor, PhD minor in business administration as well. So, you know, from that perspective, I did take some science courses, anatomy and physiology and kinesiology. So, you know, I think it certainly helps when thinking through injury, thinking through therapy and rehab, and thinking through, you know, some of the science behind what we do, But the primary emphasis and focus for me in all three of my degrees was the administration piece, the administrative piece of just the business itself.
Cool. So kind of following up on that, there's been in recent history, kind of a tradition of student athletes and people who have been a part of sports, then stepping into administration. You know, Steve Fritz has had a half a century career here, both as a coach and as a player. And he's done some really, really good things. And you two have a similar sort of a background, you know, coming from Division III sports, St. Thomas connections. Following up his legacy that he's left here, do you feel any pressure with that? What kind of things are you feeling, you know, now filling in for him?
I wouldn't say necessarily that it's pressure, Noah, as much as, you know, I feel pretty humble. You know, when you look back on the history of administrators, of athletic directors at St. Thomas, I think I'm the third in 50 years. So that's because people enjoy it so much, and the institution values loyalty, the institution values that connection to the university. And so when you look back over the years at those that have been in those roles, they've stayed for a long time because it is, it's such a great place to be, and St. Thomas values people and they value liberal arts, and they value kind of everything you can do for the student athletes. So when you get a fit like that, you know, it does lend itself to a pretty long tenure. So I'd say for me, having the opportunity to come back and serve in this capacity, following Coach Fritz is privileged. I feel humbled. Certainly I intend to carry on the great tradition that he's built at St. Thomas. Not a lot of anxiety as much as there is excitement.
And so I was reading the bio that they have for you on the Penn State website, and it says here that you were associate athletic director for Minnesota for 6 years. And during that time, you were kind of a key proponent in the fundraising and construction for TCF Bank Stadium, which opened back in 2009. And it's kind of a similar trajectory where Steve Fritz, over his time here, particularly in the last decade or so, has overseen some construction and some physical changes here to the campus with the new Anderson Athletic Center, some of the new sporting facilities. But aside from that as well, both of you have overseen programs that have blossomed and flourished, not only from the facility standpoint, but just from student involvement, student participation, and community outreach. Coming into St. Thomas now, what are some things that you want to continue or that you want to start to really kind of build upon the tradition of a strong athletics and a strong academic athletics program?
Yeah, you don't know, I think I can speak to that pretty generally, but without being on campus and without having connected real closely with some of the administrators or coaches or student athletes yet, that's a difficult question to answer. I can tell you that from an alum's perspective, decisions that are made at St. Thomas, and the program has been led by Coach Fritz with a great deal of class and integrity, a values first approach, and I think that does align and mirror pretty well what my career and tenure has followed as well. And so I absolutely intend for us to take a values approach, to take a stakeholder centric, student athlete centric, community centric approach to things. Work very closely on every single decision and how it affects the student athlete experience. You know, ultimately at the end of the day, our job is to create conditions for success so student athletes can leave as the very best versions of themselves. And so long as that's what we're doing and that's what our task is every single day, and I think you're going to see some really good outcomes.
In addition to the student athlete experience, St. Thomas has done a really good job with fan and media experience, at least for me personally, over the past 2 years, being able to, you know, cover events at, you know, the Tommy Johnny football game at Target Field. They've got a basketball game that's going to be played at US Bank Stadium in the next couple of weeks. First basketball game ever to be played there. So the athletics program has done a really good job at kind of building these big events and getting people in and making St. Thomas athletics very visible. As a baseball guy, are you trying to plan something for the baseball team coming up here in your next few years, trying to get them at a big game somewhere?
You know, the one thing I think to learn about me is, as much as I play baseball and I've got a strong affinity to that particular program, I care about all the student athletes equally. And anytime we can give any of them an extraordinary experience, whether that's, you know, football or basketball, as you mentioned, or baseball, you know, the 22 sports, all the student athletes deserve as an extraordinary and special experience as any of the other ones. So I think we'll look for opportunities to give them unique and special experiences throughout our time. And I can take any shape or form as we move through things. So it's to predict exactly what that might look like, but I can promise you that we'll look for them as often as we can.
I got a couple light questions here to close out the interview. So first, you've been with several Division I schools, University of Minnesota, Ohio State. You're out at Penn State right now. You said in your press conference that you've always been a Tommy, but where do your Division I loyalties lie when on game day on Saturdays for football? Who are you rooting for?
Well, you know, I'm going to probably reserve the right not to answer that question. I'm still employed at Penn State, and I can tell you this: everywhere you go, you get drawn in by the community, and so you get drawn in by the traditions and history and legacy. And you see the impact that has on students, and you see how much it means to the community and to the alumni. And so today I'm a huge Penn State fan. And when I was at Cal, I was a huge Cal Bears fan. And when I spent time in Minnesota, I was a Gopher fan. And of course, when I started my career, I was a really big Buckeye fan. So I think as you move through this, you'll learn that every institution connects with its community uniquely. And so I'm a fan of those institutions that can do it the right way. And I think we've done that everywhere that I've been.
All right, last question here. So you played baseball. You're a big baseball guy. Do you follow the MLB much?
I do.
So the Twins, ever since, you know, probably 2009, 2010, haven't had a lot of success. They made the playoffs a couple seasons ago, but were instantly outed by the Yankees. If you were put in a management position for the Twins, what are a couple of the things you would try and do to turn that organization around?
Well, you know, I'm not in that management position, and my career has been really focused on intercollegiate athletics, so it's difficult for me to say what kind of decisions would need to be made. I can tell you this: the Twins do a phenomenal job of engaging with their fans. What they do in the community is set across the country. They do a really, really nice job of making sure that they're out engaging and adding value to the community. Ultimately, I think those are some of the great measures of success at the professional level. How well you can engage with your fans, how well you add value to the community. And what the Twins do in their community is really second to none also. And so I've got a lot of respect for what Dave Lee Peter's been able to do and what that organization and the Pollitt family's been able to do historically. So, you know, I look forward to working with them when I get to St. Paul on some things that are similar to that.
Dr. Erson, thank you so much for joining us today.
I appreciate it, Noah. Good luck to you.
And that was Dr. Phil Esten, who will be the new athletics director starting here in January. And I was reading his bio before we did the interview. I didn't know it was like with five schools. And so I don't know if you've listened to the interview yet, Brady, at the time of this recording. But I asked him, you know, on game day, who's he rooting for? And I totally forgot that he was like still with Penn State. He's like, Well, I'm going to refrain from answering that because I'm still with Penn State technically. It's like, oh, shoot, I totally forgot. But, a lot of people could see it as like a PR kind of weaseling out of the question. I thought it was like really sincere, really enjoyed it, where he was like, you know, each community that he's been a part of, he thoroughly enjoyed it, and that he could tell you when he was working there, at that point, he was a diehard fan for whatever school he was with, whether that be the University of Minnesota, Ohio State, or not coming back to St. Thomas.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's good. That's good for us anyway that he's with us now. So,
And that was also another key point. I don't know how much we've got planned for basketball, but you know, talking about replacing Steve Fritz.
Yeah.
I mean, there have been two athletic directors in the past 50 years for St. Thomas.
Yeah, it's incredible.
You know, a lot of people might be intimidated by that, but he seems ready for the challenge. And I wrote the initial story for Tommy Media at the press conference announcing his arrival, and I really like what he said. He said you can't replace Steve Fritz, what he's meant to the university not only as an administrator but as a coach and as a player throughout his 52 years or however long it's been. But you can only build on it. And I think that's the only attitude you can have moving forward into this role now.
Kind of irreplaceable. Steve Fritz, great guy, came on the show.
We should have him on again.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, he's gotten done in January. Is that right?
Oh, no, he's staying on until May. There'll be a transition period where they're both on.
Yep, yep.
His official title is Athletics Director Emeritus, or Director Emeritus, while Dr. Esten kind of figures out what his role will be here exactly.
Gotcha. Well, let's talk hoops for a little bit here to wrap the show.
Speaking of Fritz.
Yeah, there you go. Transition. Yeah,
there's another segue there for you, Brady. It could have been three for three.
So the men's basketball team was up in Brooklyn, New York this weekend for their season opener. They played the Brooklyn Bulldogs at their place, and they lost by 1 point. It was, I only saw the last couple minutes. I just caught the very end of the game. We had the ball up. No, I think it was a tie game, and went 1 of 2 from the free throw line, took a 1 point lead with 14 seconds to go. They took a timeout, ended up getting a layup, scoring. We got the ball back. Couldn't find the basket, and lost the first game of the season, 78-77 to Brooklyn. 2 days later, we come back and play Emerson, and a very promising game for the Tommies. They win 83-78, but the star of that game was Anders Nelson, the freshman point guard, who started that game. Kid from Edina, a really, really good player. It reminds me, I said it the last episode, I think, reminds me a lot of Grant Schaefer, but I think he's better. I think he's a little quicker. And he really runs the team well. They have their home opener tonight against St. Scholastic. I'm excited to go see him play. But he had 24 points in the win. And just we'll see how he does tonight. But he seems like he's got good control of this team that has a lot of talent. They shoot a lot of threes, and he does a nice job running this team. So we'll see what he can do, especially here coming on next Friday. They head to U.S. Bank to play River Falls, a game that we're going to be covering for Time Media. It'll be very exciting to see how he plays in that atmosphere.
Yeah. The U.S. Bank game has been circled on my calendar ever since it's been announced, and particularly now with the way the team's playing. There were questions coming into the season, you know, graduating a lot of players. I mean, Ryan Bull, kind of the staple, the centerpiece of this team, is gone. But just over the week, I'm very confident how they can play. River Falls is usually a pretty tough opponent. I know in hockey, they're really dominant. Basketball, not as much, but they're still a good team. But I think the men definitely have a good shot at winning the first ever basketball game at U.S. Bank Stadium.
Yeah, I was just actually talking with one of the athletic directors or associate athletic directors here. I'm going to get a chance to go see the stadium. I see the court being put in next week before they do for a project I'm doing for class. But, yeah, it's going to be really exciting. They're going to have the end zone, or the court, rather, is going to be in the end zone. So it's going to be kind of in the far side of the football stadium. And it'll be an interesting dynamic to see how we can shoot. They talk about with three-point shooting teams in stadiums like that, where the lights are different, the depth perception is a lot different. So it'll be interesting to see how we play it. But, yeah, you mentioned River Falls is a pretty good a basketball team. We play them almost every year in the non-conference, and they're always close games. St. Thomas had an edge these last few years over them, but it'll be a good game to watch. On the women's side, they were in Oregon this weekend. They went 2-0. Two good wins for them, I think, over Lewis and Clark. I don't even know where that, like, Lewis and Clark.
Lewis and Clark College.
What the heck? They take care of Lewis and Clark in 76-43. And a really good weekend for Lucia Renikoff. She had, like 24 points or something like that.
She won her first MIAC Weekly Honors.
Yeah.
She started 41 consecutive games, but this was her first Weekly Honors, which is kind of surprising. I mean, covering the team for the past couple of years, Lucia Renikoff is a name that has been called more and more, particularly last season. She was really one of the leaders of the team. But, yeah, kind of took over against George Fox, who's ranked 10th in the nation. She scored 7 points during a 17-6 run that gave the Tommies the edge, 76-73. So the Tommies are ranked number 4 in the nation, so not a team to be messed with.
Right.
And having someone like Lucia Renikoff and the ability to kind of take over a game like that, but not only, you know, just by herself, but then also help spread the ball around, get her team in it as well, lead these kinds of comebacks. I mean, it ended a 15-game home win streak for this team, a top 10 team in the nation. Going into an environment like that, going into someone else's house and saying, nah, we're better than you, and sticking it to them, I think this women's team is phenomenal.
Yeah, especially early on in the season. That's very exciting to see. And when I'm looking at the box score here, they had 4 players in double digits. I mean, that's pretty promising that you're not relying on Hannah Spaulding. You're not having to rely on Lucia Renikoff. You can have, you know, Kaylee Brazel, 10 points. Kai Porter, 12 points. Spaulding had 16 points. Renikoff, 20 points. I mean, so it's a very balanced team. They have a lot of people that can score. They move the ball really well. One of the most disciplined basketball teams I've ever watched on men's, women's, any side. They're very, very disciplined. They move the ball really well. They play good defense. They get inside-out shots the way, you know, you're taught. And they're going to be a really good team this year. They're going to be tough to beat.
Yeah, TJ Birnbaum, our former producer, one of my best friends, he and I were talking a couple days ago, and I think he described it best. He called Hannah Spaulding a cheat code.
Yeah, like, she is. That's what you say, like, in video games, but she really
is.
I
mean, she constantly demands double coverage, if not triple coverage, in some circumstances. And I'm not too familiar with basketball coverages. And correct me if I'm wrong here, if my math is wrong, Brady, but if you have three people covering one people or one person, that leaves two people open.
Yeah, and one of those people that's open is Lucia Renikoff, who's shooting, 46% from the three-point line. They're going to kill teams. They did it last year. I remember watching the game against St. Ben's where they'd throw the ball into Spalding. They'd get a double team, a triple team. She'd just throw it right back out to one of the three-point shooters, and they're hitting almost every other one. And if you can do that, you're going to win a lot of basketball games. You'd be very successful.
Any one of these starters on the women's basketball team could be like the center point, the centerpiece of almost any D3 basketball program in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that we have five of them
yeah.
on the same team, that's just unfair.
With a head coach who is absolutely awesome, Ruth Sin. She is I think she's a genius. The way she subs her ladies in and out and the way she runs her offense and defense, they're going to be exciting. They're going to be dangerous, a very tough out in the playoffs. We'll hope they can run the table
mm-hmm.
and get there. But, yeah, that's all I got.
But before we finish off here, I think we should do another bet. We didn't do
yeah.
one last week. We don't have any Tommy Sports playing this weekend, I don't think. I think basketball's playing
basketball
a little
gets,
bit.
But
I think we need a little more time to kind of get a feel for the team, start developing some bets. So I think it's time for a good old NFL scoring bet.
Ooh, okay.
Thanksgiving football coming up. I'm real excited. And so perhaps I'm a little biased, but I think the Cowboys and Washington will be the most interesting game on TV this weekend. I mean, if you look at the NFC, you've got the Rams and the Saints. They are most likely going to be your number one and your number two. So everybody will be kind of fighting for those last four wild card spots. The NFC East is probably the crappiest and also the most interesting division in the NFC.
The dumpster fire of the NFC.
Pretty much. You've got Washington at 6-4, the Cowboys at 5-5.
Yeah.
The Eagles at 4-6, and they are spiraling. And then New York, the Giants at 3-7. I mean, at this point, you know, halfway through the season, you know, the Eagles, who are the defending Super Bowl champions, are a dumpster fire right now. But they're still only two games out of first place. The Cowboys, after a miserable start to the beginning of the season,
mm-hmm.
they're on a two-game win streak, granted against teams who are less than competitive. But they're still 5-5. They're back at 500. They're looking pretty good.
Yeah.
And Washington, they were off to a pretty good start, but then Alex Smith had that absolutely disgusting leg injury. Did you see that?
I saw just a replay of it, and it's bad.
Yeah. Kind of eerie, too. 33 years ago to the day of that injury was the Joe Theismann injury.
Really?
Yeah.
That is
Joe
weird.
Theismann sent out a tweet.
Wow.
He was like, that guy's leg looked just like mine 33 years ago.
Oh.
I feel bad for him.
Yeah, like, I mean, you got to. It was horrific, and
Althea and Carly, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but Joe Theismann was a Washington quarterback back in the 80s and had a career-ending leg injury. Snapped, I think, most of the ligaments and a couple of the bones mm-hmm. in his knee. And so Alex Smith, their current quarterback, just had a similar injury. Broke his fibia and his tibula on a play. It
oh
was
my God.
We would show the well, one, we're a radio show, so we can't, or a podcast. but we would show the injury, but it's just absolutely horrific.
Yeah.
But we're going off on a tangent here. Cowboys.
Yeah,
and
what's
Washington.
Our bet? Isn't this about
I think
bets?
Just a good old fashioned score bet. Who's gonna win and by how much?
Okay.
So I'm gonna let's put the over under. I don't know actually. Should we do by winning or should we do by score?
Let's take. I'm gonna check the line here.
Okay. Because I think the Cowboys.
I'm with Carly winning. I don't do score.
Okay. Cool. Well, yeah, let's just do that. So who's going to win, Cowboys or Washington?
Okay, I'll take the R-words. If you're a Cowboys fan, I'll take the R-words.
Thank you. But yeah,
3:30 kickoff.
Okay, the Cowboys, I think, aside from team allegiances, the way their defense is playing, the way Zeke is now finally getting going,
yeah, no,
and the lack of Alex Smith for Washington.
Yeah.
I think who's
their backup quarterback? Aren't they being like Colt McCoy?
Colt McCoy.
Oh, let's go. Texas boy. Yeah, I'll take Washington. Let's do it.
Okay. Althea, who you got? You're 3-for-3 so far.
I know.
Your perfect record is on the line here.
I'm trying to think. I feel like I hear more about Cowboys, but I'm also like not a big fan of the Cowboys, so I don't really want them to win.
Do the Cowboys historically do pretty well on Thanksgiving?
Yes, they do.
See, that's what I'm trying to...
I'm going to have to go Cowboys.
Yes. There we go. Carly, who you got?
Redskins.
Oh, there we go. Two for two.
2-2. All right.
All right, we'll see.
All right. So is it just the standard $5?
Sure. I don't think I paid you from the last one.
No, you didn't.
I'm -5. It's going to make it even after this weekend.
Or we'll just make it double my payment. It'll be $10 next week. But so that's all we got for you here on Keep the Ball Rolling. Thank you so much for joining us. We wish you a happy Thanksgiving for Brady Halbmeyer, Althea Larson, and Carly Noble. I'm Noah Brown. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week.
I'm going to eat so much food this weekend.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from KUST Campus Radio. A student-operated non-commercial radio station, KUST provides students and faculty of St. Thomas a platform dedicated to creative storytelling, diverse viewpoints, and exploring a vast array of audio content. Tune in at any time to KUST at mixler.com/KUST-radio.